This was a day of triumph, and to Bill Heath, for having the idea and working so imaginatively and patiently on it, to Frank Irwin, to all the Regents, and to dear Clark Clifford, who began it all for me when he brought me that briefcase full of a resume of all the past presidential libraries, how much they cost to build, to maintain, how many visitors, what they housed, how the money was raised, for holding my hand every step of the way through it. I didn't say quite this, but he has. I made my thanks and Lyndon to each of them. And then we got down to seeing what we thought was the best way to handle it. A release at 4 o'clock, both letters, by Bill Moyers in his regular press briefing, all the Texas correspondents present, Bill Heath on hand to represent the Board of Regents, Dr. Ransom on hand to represent the faculty, and I on hand just to glow. And then after the conference, if the reporters wanted to ask more specific questions, they could have a further go at Dr. Ransom and Bill Heath alone, because after all, there would be many other matters. Vietnam appointments, the general grist of the mill. Bill had suggested he'd like to have their wives present. And I, in one of those enormously confused days, had arranged for Patsy Derby, our Bess Abel, to entertain them down in the library, while somebody else met and entertained the Mount Holyoke student interns while we finished our meeting. When they left, I began the most hilarious tea I've ever been the hostess of in the White House, with the 37 Mount Holyoke and Connecticut College girls working for free at the Hill in the departments, two here in the White House, coming for a special tour, a little chat and refreshments with me. I simply roped June Irwin and Mavis Heath in with them, shook hands with everybody, asked them about their experiences, and then said, please go on, make yourselves at home, and have sandwiches and drinks and listen to the curator, while I dashed over to Bill Moyers' office with June and Mavis for the 4 o'clock press conference. That very self-possessed but pale, slim little David, Bill Moyers, was standing up in front of all the Goliaths. He began it by briefly summarizing the library statement, passing out copies of the two letters, introducing Dr. Ransom and the Regents, and then in came Lyndon. From then on, the press conference was somewhat divided between Lyndon talking. Yes, he hoped the building would be finished within 2 years after the plans were agreed upon. No, that didn't mean he was going to get out of office as soon as his term was over to teach, but he hoped to return to his profession sometime, and calling on Buzz to give a sort of historical resume to what had happened to the presidential papers of the other 35 presidents. I was very proud of Buzz. He is so steeped in it. The last five, of course, beginning with Hoover, are in government-controlled and supported libraries. The rest, some in the Library of Congress, some in old trunks and attics, are burned or lost to history and various ways, some in well-handled private collections, such as the Adamses, but that would be the Adamses. The press asked if Lyndon had appointed anybody to coordinate building plans with university officials. He said, I didn't have to designate any. Mrs. Johnson appointed herself. Then he told that I'd been visiting presidential libraries over the country as a first step. I was asked a question and said, my main desire is that it be a living thing that will be of use to a lot of young people interested in public service, because that has been the story of my husband's life. The eagerness with which they all asked questions, you'd have thought it was the biggest story of the day, and I was surprised the next day to see really how little space it got, and relieved too, because I did not want comparisons, and I did not want the university getting flayed for building a memorial to a man. When I thought that part of it was over, I slipped out, and at a word from Lyndon, told Mavis and June that I'd call them later at the hotel because we might go on the river for dinner. And then back I went to my Mount Holyoke students. This time they had reached the state dining room. We went on to the library and had pictures all together, me and the two who are with the White House, and then with the young lady who is covering this story for the press, Art Covert's daughter from Fredericksburg, having a summer adventure in Washington, and how pleased I was to get to see her and thank her for the research her daddy's been helping us do on the ranch house in Lyndon's daddy's days as a member of the Texas House of Representatives. Showed the Mount Holyoke girls the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden, and finally left them in the Rose Garden where Lyndon was signing a bill, no bill that would shake the world, but anyway an opportunity for them to see. Bill signing. Later I found several of them got pens, while I, inside, was trying to round up visiting Texans in town to go on the boat with us for dinner. Lyndon, in his impetuous, quick way, turned to several of the postmasters. This was the bill concerning them. Dan Quill, Oliver Brook, Mr. Myers from Floresville, and said, "You all go with us on the boat for dinner." Then he got some of the staff, Yolanda and Jenny and Jake and Buzz. Then we managed to locate the Frank Deniuses and the Don Thomases and, of course, the Heaths and the Irwins and the Grogan Lords. I was so sorry we couldn't find Posh Altoff. They'd already left, and Dr. Ransom had flown immediately back to the Cape. I signed mail frantically. My desk is piled higher and higher the last few days. I even signed it in the car while I waited for Lyndon to go to the boat. The others had already gone. But close to 9, we were on the boat. The evening was perfection. Balmy, cool, a moon. I had that great sense of a day well used, a mountain climbed, an achievement made. I almost felt like Clark Clifford and I had hauled every hod of cement that it would take to build the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library. I hope Bill Heath and Frank Irwin realized how grateful and thrilled I was. Frank told me about a plan that the city of Austin has. Tear down a temporary sort of building that's adjacent to the old post office and make there a small park, just a spot of green in the center of town. Name it the Lady Bird Johnson Park. All but the last of that I just love. He told me, too, that Homer and Eloise were in Houston for Homer to go through M.D. Anderson to take tests for possible cancer. That is why, then, could not come out to join us at the ranch. About a week ago, they'd mentioned something about tests. Suddenly and frighteningly, it is right with you. I look at June, so vivacious, living fully. Whatever pain and tensions the last few years have brought them, science and her determination have certainly wrenched a victory from it. Don Thomas and I had a talk about the brick house. He thinks the chances are a little less sanguine than a few weeks ago. Jerry is the one who objects. Ruth's lawyer advises her to put the brick house and all of her property back into the state in return for a definite income. Could I ever have thought a trip down the Potomac on a lovely yacht, that I would be satiated with it? I have, almost, but it is a never-ceasing pleasure to realize what a thrill it is for somebody like Oliver Brook or Dan Quayle or the Grogan Lords. I know because I remember the way I felt when Jim Forrestal first invited Lyndon and me about 20 years ago. An early bed seems impossible in our life. I am consoled because an evening like this is genuinely restful to Lyndon. And we were home by 12. I to sleep, he for night reading.